Chapter 90 proves that changes may be rung in the best regulated families, and that Mr. Pecknuff was a special hand at a triple bob major, as the surgeon's first care, after amputating a limb, is to take up the arteries the cruel knife has severed. So it is the duty of this history, which in its remorseless course has cut from the Pecknuffian trunk its right arm, mercy, to look to the parent stem, and see how in all its various ramifications it got on without her. And first of Mr. Pecksniff it may be observed, that having provided for his youngest daughter, that choicest of blessings, a tender and indulgent husband, and having gratified the dearest wish of his parental heart, by establishing her in life so happily, he renewed his youth, and spreading the plumage of his own bright conscience, felt himself equal to all kinds of flights. It is customary with fathers in stage plays, after giving their daughters to the men of their hearts, to congratulate themselves on having no other business on their hands, but to die immediately, though it is rarely found that they are in a hurry to do it. Mr. Pecksniff, being a father of a more sage and practical class, appeared to think that his immediate business was to live, and having deprived himself of one comfort, to surround himself with others. But however much inclined the good man was to be jocose and playful, and in the garden of his fancy to disport himself, if one may say so, like an architectural kitten, he had one impediment constantly opposed to him. The gentle Cherry, stung by a sense of slight and injury, which far from softening down or wearing out, rankled and festered in her heart, the gentle Cherry was in flat rebellion. She waged fierce war against her dear papa. She led her parent what is usually called, for want of a better figure of speech, the life of a dog. But never did that dog live, in kennel, stable yard, or house, whose life was half as hard as Mr. Pecksniff's with his gentle child. The father and daughter were sitting at their breakfast. Tom had retired, and they were alone. Mr. Pecksniff frowned at first, but having cleared his brow, looked stealthily at his child. Her nose was very red indeed, and screwed up tight, with hostile preparation. "Cherry," cried Mr. Pecksniff, "what is amiss between us? My child, why are we disunited?" Miss Pecksniff's answer was scarcely a response to this gush of affection, for it was simply, "Bother, Pa." "Bother." Repeated Mr. Pecksniff, in a tone of anguish. "Oh, 'tis too late, Pa," said his daughter, "calmly to talk to me like this. I know what it means, and what its value is. This is hard." Cried Mr. Pecksniff, addressing his breakfast cup. "This is very hard. She is my child. I carried her in my arms, when she wore shapeless worsted shoes, I might say, mufflers many years ago. You needn't taunt me with that, Pa," retorted Cherry, with a spiteful look. "I am not so many years older than my sister either, though she is married to your friend." Human nature. Poor human nature," said Mr. Pecksniff, shaking his head at human nature, as if he didn't belong to it. "To think that this discord should arise from such a cause, oh dear, oh dear." "From such a cause indeed." Cried Cherry. "State the real cause, Pa, or I'll state it myself. Mind, I will." Perhaps the energy with which she said this was infectious. However that may be, Mr. Pecksniff changed his tone and the expression of his face for one of anger, if not downright violence, when he said, "You will, you have. You did yesterday. You do always. You have no decency. You make no secret of your temper. You have exposed yourself to Mr. Chuzzlewit 100 times. Myself." Cried Cherry, with a bitter smile. "Oh indeed. I don't mind that." "Me too, then," said Mr. Pecksniff. His daughter answered with a scornful laugh. "And since we have come to an explanation, Charity, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, rolling his head portentously. Let me tell you that I won't allow it. None of your nonsense, miss. I won't permit it to be done. Apostrophe, I shall do, apostrophe said Charity, rocking her chair backwards and forwards, and raising her voice to a high pitch. I shall do, pa, what I please, and what I have done. I am not going to be crushed in everything, depend upon it. I've been more shamefully used than anybody ever was in this world, apostrophe here she began to cry and sob, and may expect the worst treatment from you, I know. But I don't care for that. No, I don't. Apostrophe, Mr. Pecksniff was made so desperate by the loud tone in which he spoke, that, after looking about him in frantic uncertainty for some means of softening it, he rose and shook her until the ornamental bow of hair upon her head nodded like a plume. She was so very much astonished by this assault, that it really had the desired effect. I'll do it again. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mr. Pecksniff, as he resumed his seat, and fetched his breath, if you dare to talk in that loud manner. How do you mean about being shamefully used? If Mr. Jonas chose your sister in preference to you, who could help it, I should wish to know? What have I to do with it? Apostrophe, wasn't I made a convenience of? Weren't my feelings trifled with? Didn't he address himself to me first? Apostrophe, apostrophe, sobbed Cherry, clasping her hands, and oh, good gracious, that I should live to be shook. Apostrophe, apostrophe, you'll live to be shaken again, apostrophe, returned her parent, if you drive me to that means of maintaining the decorum of this humble roof. You surprise me. I wonder you have not more spirit. If Mr. Jonas didn't care for you, how could you wish to have him? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I wish to have him. Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed Cherry. I wish to have him, pa. Apostrophe, then what are you making all this piece of work for? Apostrophe, retorted her father, if you didn't wish to have him. Apostrophe, apostrophe, because I was treated with duplicity, apostrophe, said Cherry, and because my own sister and my own father conspired against me. I am not angry with her, apostrophe said Cherry, looking much more angry than ever. I pity her. I'm sorry for her. I know the fate that's in store for her, with that wretch. Apostrophe, Mr. Jonas will survive your calling him a wretch, my child, I dare say, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, with returning resignation. But call him what you like, and make an end of it. Apostrophe, not an end. Pa, apostrophe said Charity. No, not an end. That's not the only point on which we're not agreed. I won't submit to it. It's better you should know that at once. No, I won't submit to it indeed, Pa. I am not quite a fool, and I am not blind. All I have got to say is, I won't submit to it. Apostrophe, whatever she meant, she shook Mr. Pecksniff now. For his lame attempt to seem composed was melancholy in the last degree. His anger changed to meekness, and his words were mild and fawning. My dear, apostrophe he said, if in the short excitement of an angry moment I resorted to an unjustifiable means of suppressing a little outbreak calculated to injure you as well as myself, it's possible I may have done so. Perhaps I did, I ask your pardon. A father asking pardon of his child, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, is, I believe, a spectacle to soften the most rugged nature. Apostrophe, but it didn't at all soften Miss Pecksniff, perhaps because her nature was not rugged enough. On the contrary, she persisted in saying, over and over again, that she wasn't quite a fool, and wasn't blind, and wouldn't submit to it. You labor under some mistake, my child. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Pecksniff. But I will not ask you what it is. I don't desire to know. No, pray. Apostrophe, he added, holding out his hand and coloring again. Let us avoid the subject, my dear, whatever it is. Apostrophe, apostrophe, it's quite right that the subject should be avoided between us, sir, apostrophe, said Cherry. But I wish to be able to avoid it altogether, and consequently must beg you to provide me with a home. apostrophe, Mr. Pecksniff looked about the room, and said, a home, my child. Apostrophe, apostrophe, another home, papa, apostrophe, said Jerry, with increasing stateliness. Plus me at Mrs. Todgers or somewhere, on an independent footing, but I will not live here, if such is to be the case. Apostrophe, it is possible that Miss Pecksniff saw in Mrs. Todgers a vision of enthusiastic men, pining to fall in adoration at her feet. It is possible that Mr. Pecksniff, in his newborn juvenility, saw, in the suggestion of that same establishment, an easy means of relieving himself from an irksome charge in the way of temper and watchfulness. It is undoubtedly a fact that in the attentive ears of Mr. Pecksniff, the proposition did not sound quite like the dismal knell of all his hopes. But he was a man of great feeling and acute sensibility, and he squeezed his pocket handkerchief against his eyes with both hands as such men always do, especially when they are observed. One of my birds, apostrophe Mr. Pecksniff said, has left me for the stranger's breast. The other would take wing to Todgers. Well, well, what am I? I don't know what I am, exactly. Never mind. Apostrophe, even this remark, made more pathetic perhaps by his breaking down in the middle of it, had no effect upon Charity. She was grim, rigid, and inflexible. But I have ever, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, sacrificed my children's happiness to my own, I mean my own happiness to my children's, and I will not begin to regulate my life by other rules of conduct now. If you can be happier at Mrs. Todgers than in your father's house, my dear, go to Mrs. Todgers. Do not think of me, my girl, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff with emotion. I shall get on pretty well, no doubt. Apostrophe, Miss Charity, who knew he had a secret pleasure in the contemplation of the proposed change, suppressed her own, and went on to negotiate the terms. His views upon this subject were at first so very limited that another difference, involving possibly another shaking, threatened to ensue, but by degrees they came to something like an understanding, and the storm blew over. Indeed, Miss Charity's idea was so agreeable to both, that it would have been strange if they had not come to an amicable agreement. It was soon arranged between them that the project should be tried, and that immediately, and that Charity's not being well, and needing change of scene, and wishing to be near her sister, should form the excuse for her departure to Mr. Chuzzlewit and Mary, to both of whom she had pleaded indisposition for some time past. These premises agreed on, Mr. Pecksniff gave her his blessing, with all the dignity of a self-denying man who had made a hard sacrifice, but comforted himself with the reflection that virtue is its own reward. Thus they were reconciled for the first time since that not easily forgiven night when Mr. Jonas, repudiating the elder, had confessed his passion for the younger sister, and Mr. Pecksniff had abetted him on moral grounds. But how happened it in the name of an unexpected addition to that small family, the seven wonders of the world, whatever and wherever they may be, how happened it that Mr. Pecksniff and his daughter were about to part? How happened it that their mutual relations were so greatly altered? Why was Miss Pecksniff so clamorous to have it understood that she was neither blind nor foolish, and she wouldn't bear it? It is not possible that Mr. Pecksniff had any thoughts of marrying again, or that his daughter, with the sharp eye of a single woman, fathomed his design. Let us inquire into this. Mr. Pecksniff, as a man without reproach, from whom the breath of slander passed like common breath from any other polished surface, could afford to do what common men could not. He knew the purity of his own motives, and when he had a motive worked at it as only a very good man or a very bad one can. Did he set before himself any strong and palpable motives for taking a second wife? Yes, and not one or two of them, but a combination of very many. Old Martin Chuzzlewit had gradually undergone an important change. Even upon the night when he made such an ill-timed arrival at Mr. Pecksniff's house, he was comparatively subdued and easy to deal with. This Mr. Pecksniff attributed, at the time, to the effect his brother's death had had upon him. But from that hour his character seemed to have modified by regular degrees, and to have softened down into a dull indifference for almost everyone but Mr. Pecksniff. His looks were much the same as ever, but his mind was singularly altered. It was not that this or that passion stood out in brighter, or in dimmer hues, but that the color of the whole man was faded. As one trait disappeared, no other trait sprung up to take its place. His senses dwindled too. He was less keen of sight, was deaf sometimes, took little notice of what passed before him, and would be profoundly taciturn for days together. The process of this alteration was so easy that almost as soon as it began to be observed it was complete. But Mr. Pecksniff saw it first, and having Anthony Chuzzlewit fresh in his recollection, saw in his brother Martin the same process of decay. To a gentleman of Mr. Pecksniff's tenderness, this was a very mournful sight. He could not but foresee the probability of his respected relative being made the victim of designing persons, and of his riches falling into worthless hands. It gave him so much pain that he resolved to secure the property to himself, to keep bad testamentary suitors at a distance, to wall up the old gentleman, as it were, for his own use. By little and little, therefore, he began to try whether Mr. Chuzzlewit gave any promise of becoming an instrument in his hands, and finding that he did, and indeed that he was very supple in his plastic fingers, he made it the business of his life-kind soul to establish an ascendancy over him, and every little test he durst apply meeting with a success beyond his hopes, he began to think he heard old Martin's cash already chinking in his own unworldly pockets. But when Mr. Pecksniff pondered on this subject as, in his zealous way, he often did, and thought with an uplifted heart of the train of circumstances which had delivered the old gentleman into his hands for the confusion of evildoers, and the triumph of a righteous nature, he always felt that Mary Graham was his stumbling block. Let the old man say what he would, Mr. Pecksniff knew he had a strong affection for her. He knew that he showed it in a thousand little ways, that he liked to have her near him, and was never quite at ease when she was absent long. That he had ever really sworn to leave her nothing in his will, Mr. Pecksniff greatly doubted. That even if he had, there were many ways by which he could evade the oath and satisfy his conscience, Mr. Pecksniff knew. That her unprotected state was no light burden on the old man's mind, he also knew, for Mr. Chuzzlewit had plainly told him so. Then, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, what, if I married her? What, apostrophe repeated Mr. Pecksniff, sticking up his hair and glancing at his bust by spoker, what if, making sure of his approval first he is nearly imbecile, poor gentleman, I married her. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Pecksniff had a lively sense of the beautiful, especially in women. His manner towards the sex was remarkable for its insinuating character. It is recorded of him in another part of these pages that he embraced Mrs. Todgers on the smallest provocation, and it was a way he had. It was a part of the gentle placidity of his disposition. Before any thought of matrimony was in his mind, he had bestowed on Mary many little tokens of his spiritual admiration. They had been indignantly received, but that was nothing. True, as the idea expanded within him, these had. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.